Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
We're excited to welcome to the show the man, the myth, the legend, Greg Vrnovich. I only know him as Vern. Vern, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be here, John and Billy.
So word on the street is that after years of leading people up Everest, you have interest in getting back into the coaching world. What makes you want to come back into coaching after your long hiatus from coaching?
Boy, that's a great question. I love coaching. I've always loved coaching. And when I stopped coaching for, as you said, the hiatus, people said, oh, you'll be back. You just watch. And I said, hey, never say never. And I just got a few other things in life that I feel like I need to get out of my system. And you know what they say, no what ifs and no shouldas. So I decided I needed to go do a few other things. And hey, I'm definitely open to any opportunity to get back in the gym or on the beach. And there's a lot of great things going on in volleyball these days.
Cool. Well, we're really excited that you're back and to talk to you about your time at Everest. Our topic today is leadership through adversity, and Everest seems like it could be an environment for some adversity. Can you take us through what it's like and maybe a story of where you had to lead through adverse conditions?
Boy, there's adversity on Mount Everest every year. I was up this morning, and so this week is a huge week for us on Mount Everest, and hopefully by the time this program airs, our team will have gone to the summit and been back down to base camp safe and sound, fingers and toes and nose and everything else. But, you know, I was up at 2 o'clock this morning looking at the weather, talking to our team over on Mount Everest. They're at camp 2 right now, and there's this little storm they call a typhoon off the west coast of India. And there's another cyclone forming in the Bay of Bengal. And those are adverse conditions right there. And what we're doing is we're working our way through that in terms of weather. In terms of other adverse situations, I've been going to Mount Everest now for 12 years. And that includes there was a pretty big avalanche in 2014, a pretty big earthquake and avalanche in 2015. And, it's tough to prepare. You never prepare for situations like that. And you hope that all your training and all your experience, having been in the mountains and having worked with people, takes hold at that point in time. And I would say the number one thing that I count on when I know I'm going into adversity is my team. I won't go into any situation, and this goes back to my coaching. This is when I'm on the mountain. I won't go into an adverse situation without a great team. And I have been honored and had the pleasure of having the greatest teams, in my humble opinion, ever, whether it be in the gym, whether it be on the beach, or whether it be in the mountain. I have had the opportunity and honor to work with unbelievably great people, and I get to call them my teammates. I just happen to be the leader or the head coach of most of these people, but when you hit adversity, you got to have a great team, and you got to lean on each other when you're in that situation.
What are some of the qualities of those great teams? What separates them from maybe an average team?
What separates a great team from an average team? Experience, having the ability to execute the game plan in a less than ideal situation. It's easy to climb a mountain when it's a bluebird sunny day, and there's no snow falling out of the sky, and there's no avalanche risk, and there's no ice blocks hanging over your head. It's easier, right? It's great to play a tournament when there's only 1 mile an hour wind, and there's perfect sky, and the stands are totally full, and you're on your A game. It's when things go sideways, you know, it's when the wind picks up, it's when it starts sprinkling on you, in the mountains, it's when it starts snowing and blowing. And, a lot of that is experience and practice. Have you been in a situation like that? And have you executed in a situation like that? And every situation is different and you have to, adapt to those situations. I always say, you have to be patient and flexible. And when things go sideways, my term is hit the pause button, and boy, when you might call a timeout, you might go clean your sunglasses off if you're on the beach. You just need a quick second here to hit the pause button and take a look at your teammates and just do a little system check. And so that's what we do in the mountain. We hit the pause button and we just don't go headlong into a bad situation. We make sure we have a good game plan before we go in.
That's great advice. So 12 years of Everest, how many times have you made it to the peak?
I've been to the summit once in 2010.
Wow. Yeah. And how many attempts?
Once I went to the summit in 2010 and I was the expedition leader on that trip also, but I took the opportunity to go to the summit and guide some folks as well. And after that, it was a team decision that it was better if I stayed put at base camp and oversaw the entire, as we call it, the 40,000 foot view. I'm sure you've seen some head coaches also be players. And I think that's a really tough thing to do. There's international leagues out there where head coaches are also the players. And man, that's tough because you got to focus on what you're doing. So I would have to focus on what I'm doing as a guide, as well as the head coach. And I think the head coach needs to have a 40,000 foot view. And then they've got assistant coaches that are working on offense and defense. And, you have faith in those people, but, somebody's got to make the ultimate decision. And that's me in the mountains and that's you as the head coach.
Right. So you're, just so I understand it right, so you're up at like base camp. Maybe, is it base camp one? Is that where you would be, like headquarters, or is it a different spot?
Yeah, Everest Base Camp. It's about 17,500 feet, and every now and then I'll go a little way up the mountain. I'll go to Camp One, about 20,000 feet, or Camp Two, 22,000 feet, just to check things out, make sure I have my finger on the pulse of what's going on in conditions. And hey, it's fun. I like to get out there and climb, be with the clients, be with the people. It's the same thing as coaching. There's some coaches that can just either sit on a bench on the sidelines and coach, or you can get in there and be an active participant. And I've always been one of those lead by example type guys. So I like to get in there and practice was the greatest thing ever for me, because it was like, we were all in there together, shut the doors, lock them, and let's get down to business and have some fun.
Yeah. I love that. So then of all, I guess, how many, like, so you have your season, how many trips are you leading each season? So you're down there in Everest at the base camp, like how many are you a part of?
One. So Everest.
So it's one each year.
Yep. One. Every season is every spring. We usually leave home around the middle of March and we're home ideally the beginning of June. So we're gone just about 3 months, and the ideal time to climb Mount Everest is right now as we speak. Yeah. It's usually the middle to second half of May. And that's when the jet stream moves to the north, and it's right before the monsoon season. And we get some pretty nice weather up there to climb to the top of the world and see the curve of the earth.
That's amazing. And so then of those, I guess, 12 trips that you were leading, how many made it to the top?
Oh boy, I think I'm responsible for about 500 people, probably a little over five or 600 people. I'd have to look up the exact number. I'm not too much of a numbers guy. I like, I'm more of an individual and treat everybody individually. And I just love seeing everybody go up there and achieve their dream. And more importantly than that, come back down and go home and celebrate with their friends and family.
So then I'm sure of those, in those 12 years, there's been a lot of people who didn't make it, you know, to the top, and there was adversity. And you, I mean, you mentioned obviously an earthquake and, you know, crazy weather conditions. What do you do to learn from maybe mistakes made or challenges from each trip?
Wow. Yeah. You know, on Mount Everest, you hope that you don't make crucial mistakes. You know, you can't make crucial mistakes because it's you're walking a little bit more of a fine line on Mount Everest. So you by the time you get there, you're looking at avoiding making mistakes and seeing situations before they happen. Mm-hmm. So you run through every scenario that can possibly happen before you actually get into that scenario to avoid getting into situations. But that being said, I learned something new every day, every year from different people. You just got to keep your eyes and ears open. I know when I first went to the Himalayas years ago now, I think 13 or 14 years ago, I learned an enormous amount from these people called Sherpa, and it's their last name and it's their ethnicity. And I'm so honored to call a lot of them some of my best friends in the world. And had they not been there, I don't know. I learned so much. You learn so much from watching other people perform in the mountains. And it made me think back to coaching and as players. And it's, you know, now in the ability, we're older now, but you think back and it's, you think about, okay, there's been a whole bunch of kids watching and players, and the players are watching you even as coaches. And you would be surprised at the things they pick up just from watching you. And so, you know, not to put yourself on watch, but you need to know. And so, you know, when I'm out there, you know, I'm leading by example. And if I do if I make a bonehead move or decide I'm going to put a bonehead move in the mountains is if you decide to take your gloves off and set them down on the ground, probably one of the worst decisions you could make, because they're either going to slide down the mountain or they're going to blow away and then they're gone. And that's going to lead to frostbite, and frostbite's going to lead to losing fingers and toes and worse. So, just the little things, you know, you just got to stay on top of it. And it's the same in the gym.
Yeah.
What, Vern, what kind of physical preparation can you do leading up to a trip up Everest?
Man, beside practicing with the biggest spoon you can find in the drawer and eating everything in sight, I'd say that's one of the number one things, you know.
Billy's good at that.
Yeah, I'm ready. I've been training for years.
I've been training for years for that. Yeah, you know, hey, we want to eat, but, you know, for Mount Everest, it's core. You know, you got to have core strength. I've seen people come in and say, boy, I've been training so hard. My legs are the strongest they've ever been in my life. And, you know, that's a big part of it, you know, having strong legs that can carry you up and down the mountain. But your legs are only going to carry you as far as your core takes you. You know, you got to have strong abs. You got to have a strong back. You know, you got to carry that backpack. You're going to be breathing harder than you've ever been breathing in your life when you climb Mount Everest. And so that's a lot of core. And then you're working with ropes. So that's upper body and shoulders. So I'm a big believer in core strength. And yeah, there's the Olympic lifting and there's all these new fads out there in terms of training. And I think they're all great. And then variety. And, you know, one of the things I say about a month leading up to the trip is, you know, train hard, but don't get hurt. You know, in the last month of training, and this goes whether you're in the gym or going to the Olympics, in the last month, I don't think you're going to reinvent the wheel. And I don't think you're going to learn something that is just, whoa, holy smokes, this is now magic. And I'm going to summit the mountain even easier in the last month. So, you know, this has all happened months and years in advance, whether you're going to win a championship, a gold medal, or summit Mount Everest. You've been training for months and years to go and accomplish this dream and goal. So keep training hard, but don't get hurt.
Right. So the physical challenge is obviously insane, but it seems like the mental side of it is maybe the separator. I mean, you tell me, I guess, how can you mentally prepare and what can you do mentally to endure?
Yeah, it's a great question. And in the mountains, I have three, I call them three pillars in the mountains. And the first one we just talked about, it's easy. And everybody always gets it when I say, what are the three pillars to climbing Mount Everest? The first one is physical. You got to be physically strong and you got to stay strong for a long period of time. And then the next one is the mental side of things. You've got to be mentally tough and you have gone through every scenario that you're going to encounter on the mountain multiple times. As a kid, I wanted to be like Michael Jordan. And there's an old saying by a coach that's, you know, says, I hear, I forget, I see, I remember, I do, I understand. And so you could hear somebody describe how Michael Jordan would jump from the foul line and dunk the basketball. And you'd say, oh, yeah, OK, maybe I can try to do that as a kid. But, you know, and then you see him. So I hear, I forget, I see. And so you see him do it and you remember. And then you do and you try to jump from the foul line and you probably didn't do it, but you did it and you understood just how hard that was. And in the mountains, so there's that mental side of things and you've gone through it mentally. You've put on your crampons. You've tied your shoes. You've put on your down suit. You've put on your harness and doubled it back. You know how to do those knots that we use in the mountains. As I say, you can do the knots upside down in a cold shower with the lights off. And it's just, it's unconsciously, you're unconsciously competent in the mountains with all the practices. And then the third pillar is the emotional pillar. And so you have the physical, the mental, and the emotional. And that's something that a lot of people overlook. I said, you're there for just about 3 months and you're on the mountain and you are focused on that goal of summoning Mount Everest for about 3 months. And that takes a toll on everybody emotionally. You know, you have friends at home and they're worried about you. You know, as soon as you tell your friends and family, I'm going to climb Mount Everest, I equate it to two cinder blocks. One cinder block says Mount and the other cinder block says Everest. And you're putting those cinder blocks on your shoulders because everybody in the world knows what Mount Everest is. And everybody in the world thinks sounds like a pretty tall challenge. And so there's an emotional side of things where your friends and family are thinking about you and worried about you. And you need to have the support of your friends and family. And then when I tell people, when you get over the Hillary step and get up a little closer to the summit, it becomes real fast, you know, and you start seeing the summit and you say to yourself, holy smokes, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. And you know, you start getting emotional. And you know what? On the beach, when it's 20 to 18 and you're the last team on the court and it's for the national championship, all you got to do is serve that ball in and execute. But you start thinking, holy smokes, we can do this. And if you start letting your emotions get to you a little bit, hey, before you know it, it's 20 all and you're in another battle. Same thing on Mount Everest. You get over the Hillary step, you see the summit and you might start getting a pretty emotional. Well, you just get into the summit, as they say, is only halfway there. Get up there, celebrate your successes and then get off the mountain. You still got some work to do. So you got to keep your emotions in check.
Mm, I like it.
You mentioned in preparation, train hard, but don't get hurt. Once you're in it, once you're on the mountain, how do you find the balance between like pushing too hard towards danger and possible death and maybe being a little more cautious or healthy?
Man, easy answer. The first person you got to be honest with is yourself. You got to be honest with yourself. You wake up every morning and the first person you see is probably the one looking back at you in the mirror. And you got to be honest with yourself every day and how are you going to get better and all that stuff. But on the mountain, even more so, you have to check yourself every single day. And I used to say to myself in the mountains and any mountain around the world, if I didn't second guess myself every day, then I should probably be thinking a little harder about what's going on and what I'm doing. And so, you know, as things get tough in the mountain, you got to be honest with yourself first and then honest with your teammates, just right neck and neck. Because if you're not honest with yourself and honest with your teammates, then we can't help you. You know, I always tell people on Mount Everest, you know, if you're honest with yourself and then you come to me, there's a good chance there's an easy answer to the question you have floating around in your head, and we can solve that. Yeah. So that'd be the first thing, is be honest with yourself, be honest with your teammates. And if you're not ready to go that day, you got to let us know and we'll figure it out. Yeah. And then preparation is the other thing. You know, in the mountains, I like to, it's real easy for people to come in the gym, or a new recruit or a freshman or, somebody who's coming to Mount Everest, to say, okay, so, you know, Billy, you know, here I am and I'm in your gym now, and I know I need to get better at this and I'm not the best at that. And, you know, I'm going to get better at this. Well, before you know it, and before they know it, they've talked themselves out of being the best player in the world. You know, where I like to start with anybody, whether it's in the gym or on the mountain, is tell me what you're good at. You know, tell me what, you know, hey, I'm great at using my ascender on a fixed line, which is a rope attached to the mountain, and pulling on that thing to help me get up the mountain. You know, if I get a player in the gym, I want to see some confidence. And when I say, hey, I need a setter over here, that person runs to the net and says, hey, I'm right here, I got this. Hey, I know that they're confident with that. And we can probably say, okay, we're good with that person in their setting. And then we can always build on the stuff that we need to improve on. So that'd be the other thing. Hopefully cool. I answered that question.
Yeah. And what about, I guess in the moment, if you're a guide and you believe there's no danger as far as like the guest can do it, but they're having their doubts and stuff, I guess, what does that conversation sound like in the moment? You mentioned earlier, I guess, maybe pressing pause and slowing down, but I guess, yeah. How do you handle that when you know a person can push more than they are?
Wow. Yeah. You know, first and foremost, you got to put people in position to succeed. I call it setting them up for success, you know, and don't let somebody swim too far out to sea without being able to get back. And, you know, if you're on the mountain and you're in a situation where your client or the guest doesn't have it that day, and it's a tough discussion. But that is not the first time that you've had that discussion. You need to set the standard. You need to manage expectations, and you have to have that bar set for each individual. And again, you know, whether it's the mountain or you're in the gym or on the beach, you know, you've set that standard and you've got that bar and you have that list of expectations for the team and for each individual player. So when you need to turn somebody around on the mountain, you've already had that discussion with that person and you've set that expectation and they know what's coming. It's the, you know, just like a player who gets subbed out, or the team loses a big match. If you get turned around in the mountains, if you lose a big match, it hurts. There's no nice words to use when you don't accomplish that dream or that goal that you've worked so hard on. You know, we're red-blooded and we like to succeed and we like to accomplish our dream and our goal. And when we lose or we don't get that summit, man, it stings. The word I use is it stings. And, you know, the answer for that is it should sting. When we've put everything we've had and you're in that last match in an AVP event and you just come up short, oh man, you know, that's not fun. But you know what? You live to fight another day and you learn from that and you get together with your partner. And the same thing in the mountains, it's about living to fight another day. And more important than anything is making sure that, you know, hey, it's okay. The mountain's not going anywhere. Mount Everest isn't going anywhere. It's only getting taller. you can come back and we can build on, you know, the things that we need to work on to get you up there. But the most important thing is getting you back home to your friends and family so that you can think about it and you can come back and, or LMU can get to that championship game and take care of business.
We're working on it. Yeah. But yeah, your leadership, seems really, practical and helpful. So, I love it. So I've heard, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that going up Everest, you go right base camp to base camp, and then maybe you come back down as you acclimate and then go back up and kind of work your way to acclimate your body.
So we call them rotations. Okay. And so we in the mountains, we call them rotations. So we all get to Everest base camp and we do some acclimatizing there. That's at 17,500 feet. And then from there, we work our way up and down the mountain. And we work our way up and down the mountain to get our bodies used to the thinner air, the difficult climbing, the different things that we're going to have to go through. But more important than anything, it's to get our bodies used to climbing in that environment. You know, climbing Mount Everest, you know, you're going through almost every temperate zone that you can go through. And you're ending up in the jet stream. And, you know, the next time you're in an airplane and the pilot comes on and says, we've just crossed through 30,000 feet. Take a look out the window and you're standing on top of Mount Everest from inside a nice pressurized airplane. And it's kind of interesting because your ears pop. Same thing on the mountain. You know, we're going up and down to get our bodies used to a more difficult living situation. And I call it, you don't want to go up Mount Everest on any rotation until your body's, I call it bulletproof. You know, so we just got done talking about, three pillars, the physical. You want your body to be physically bulletproof before you go up that mountain. And, you know, on the south side, we go through a thing called the Khumbu Icefall, and, that's a different animal altogether. But you want your body inside and out to be bulletproof. And that's very important. Don't go up on a rotation unless your body's ready to go up there. And that means your legs, your core, and your lungs and your heart inside and out. Be bulletproof.
Yeah, so our mental skills coach who works with my LMU team this year, Bernie Holiday, he was using that analogy for our team throughout the year. You know, whenever we experience pressure, he used the base camp, like it's, you know, you got to be in some thin air and now you'll be more ready for the next time you're in a high pressure environment. It sounds like that analogy holds up. Does that seem like that's accurate?
Absolutely. Oh, that's a great analogy. And it's a season. It's a season in a nutshell. I can't imagine the first practice of the year, you just start cranking balls at people and saying, okay, you know, we're going to compete and the loser's going to, you know, run 100 miles if you lose. I don't know. That's way out there. And that's such a, I had to use something so far out there that everybody could understand what we're talking about. But you know, your first practice of the year, you're going to get to know who you have in the gym on the beach. And you're not just going to throw them to the wolves. But is that setting your team up for success? Mm-hmm. You know, we could get to Mount Everest and say, okay, tomorrow we're just going to go to the summit and here's your oxygen tank and your regulator and your mask. You got a couple of minutes to figure that out. But once you figure that out, then we're going to go up the mountain. it's a great analogy, and I have a story for you that is fantastic. And so you have your brain doctor working with your team. I have these people on Mount Everest. In 2009, we had a gentleman by the name of Scott Parazynski climb Mount Everest with us. And Scott Parazynski is the only human being to both have walked in space and climb Mount Everest. Mm. And when Scott Parazynski, fantastic person, and boy, there's a guy, you get him on the podcast. Scott is just a fantastic person. And when he was at Everest back in 2009, we asked him, we said, Scott, before you did your first spacewalk, how many times did you practice getting in and out of that suit so that you were unconsciously competent and knew you did every single thing you needed to do? And he just said, thousands. And so we're going to put on oxygen and we're going to go to the summit of Mount Everest. How many times, and that's the jet stream where it's very difficult. There's only a few hundred people who've ever summited without oxygen. How many times do you think you should practice going through your oxygen system before you go to the summit of Mount Everest? How many times do you think you should practice passing and setting and hitting that deep shot to the corner before you get into that gold medal match or that national championship match? You're visualizing that, you're practicing it, and hey, pick your poison. Repetition and going up and down the mountain, setting yourself up for success. It's not brain surgery. It's just, practice.
Yeah. So before we're going to move on to some team culture stuff. Before we do, maybe you could just kind of wrap up Everest for us. I don't know if there's any, probably hard to do, but any like major lessons that stand out, through all your years?
Be careful. That's a good one. Careful. Have the support of your friends and family. Make good decisions. Be great teammates. And do what's right. And sometimes the most difficult decisions in the world happen to be the right ones. So make good choices when you're up there, and look after your teammates.
That was part one with Greg Vrnovich. Join us next week as Greg talks about building a great culture. And thanks for listening to Coach Your Brains Out. If you haven't done so yet, please subscribe on your podcast provider. To support the show, visit patreon.com/coachyourbrainsout.